Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
I have this podcast. It's called The Dollop. It's an American history show. I've learned a lot from doing that show. One of the main things I've learned is that in my life, I've not learned a lot. A lot of facts have missed me for some reason. For instance, I publicly learned on the show that Benjamin Franklin was never a president. So. That's right. So that's where I'm operating from mentally. And if you're not laughing right now, it's because you're processing new information, which...
That's comedian Gareth Reynolds from his debut album, Riddled with Disease, which was recorded here in Wisconsin. Born and raised in the Milwaukee area, he's now based in Los Angeles. Gareth has written for some of TV's most influential comedies, including You're the Worst and Arrested Development. He's also the co-host of the popular history podcast, The Dollop, with fellow comedian Dave Anthony. Gareth grew up on the sweet streets of Cream City, where he developed his passion and some material for comedy.
When I was in school, I had no real concept of what I wanted to do. And then kind of early, I knew I wanted to do comedy in some way. So I started doing comedy sports at my high school. And that kind of led me to comedy sports in Milwaukee, which is, you know, the original. And it was,
yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, 20 some years ago now. So it's like, you know, really one of those transformative times where I just really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And kind of because of comedy sports and doing theater and things in high school, I was like, okay, well, now I know what I want to do, and then I had to figure out, you know, how the hell to do it.
Yeah, and you've managed to do that. Yeah. You were raised by English parents here in Wisconsin. Can you talk a bit about that? What was that like?
It was really weird because they were, you know, I mean, there is a culture clash between those. Like, they, you know, my parents were both very English, and my brother was born in England, and then I was kind of born in Milwaukee, and I was very much a Milwaukee child. So, like, there would be, like, Milwaukee traits that I would take on that my little English mother would be very, like, puzzled and disturbed by. Like, I remember when I had a mullet for, no joke, 11 years. Like, it was, like, a signature, like, Billy Ray set. Like, it was my calling card, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Signature.
And my
look,
English mother was just like, oh, are you sure you don't want to cut the back? And I'd be like, the back's the whole thing.
Yeah, that's the party. That's where the party is.
That's right, Mom. Got business up front. Yeah, let it loose it back.
Yeah.
And so I think it was weird. It was also cool because I was able to kind of be incubated by the English culture and then really was exposed through my friends and through, you know, social situations to Wisconsin and the things that I embrace and love about Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't help but notice that you said you were kind of born in Milwaukee. So that makes me think, were you born like in sort of in the outskirts, or were you born in Tosa, maybe in Brown Deer? Or were you?
I think I was born in Brown Deer. Is what I think. But I'm a little like the Dalai Lama. I popped up and they were like, there's a new one.
Yeah.
No. I was born in Milwaukee County, but I do believe I was born in Brown Deer. I guess I should know that. Most people would
know that.
Oh,
interesting. Okay. I just threw that out because we were talking about Brown Deer yesterday. So interesting. One of my favorite bits on your new album is your Father Time routine, in which you talk about your father. Can you tell me a bit about that routine?
Well, my father, when he calls me, he also, I mean, he's split his life between England and Wisconsin, so he does have a very weird accent. You know, what I say on the album is he sounds like a blood diamond trader more than, you wouldn't peg him for either of those places.
Yeah.
But when he calls me, he has this instinct, that which I think a lot of parents do, you know, to just tell you the time. Which the phone takes care, you know, you're very aware now with phones when someone called, but my father, when he leaves me voicemails, he'll be like, 2:30 here in Wisconsin, 12:30 your time. And like, it never ends, and I bust his chops about it. And I think I've gotten to the point now, because I've made fun of him so much about it, that now what he does is he just texts me, call me when you can.
Right? Anything could happen to him. He'd be like, listen to me and listen good. I'm trapped in an intergalactic wormhole. I don't know how I got here. There is no time here. I'm not even in my body. I'm just vapor in the stars. I'm gas, baby. I don't know. Actually, if I look ahead, I can see the beginning of a black hole. And if I move my essence deep into that, I see the cusp of the event horizon. And inside that is, how's the creator? It's not man, it's not woman, it just is. It's like a plasmic jellyfish of positivity. Yes, it's teaching me so much so fast. All the answers of the universe, all the mystic fallacies of the galaxies, yes. Yes, as a people, we've become fixated on the wrong things, like time. Time is a construct. What matters is each other. Because we're all interconnected, yes, yes. The space between us is invented. We are all one. My God, we were put here to love, and love is what we must do. The meaning of life is empathy. It's all so clear now. 2:10 your time.
For years, it would go on, yeah. Where he was unable to not tell me the time. Imagine not knowing what time it is, yeah. Where you live.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if you want to talk about this, but you were on this hidden camera TV show, The Real Wedding Crashers, and you jokingly yes. say that this gig was, quote, as creatively stimulating as it was successful, end quote, but it seemingly launched your television writing career. Would that be fair to say?
Well, what it did was it kind of had nothing to do with writing, essentially. It was definitely, there were connections I made through that show that, you know, kind of behooved me for years and years to come. But little of it was from the actual show. Like, the show was not good. The show did not do well. Even it was one of the things where it's like you did this thing and you weren't sure how it was going to be. And then it was like people who were, like, excited for it didn't know how to react because they wanted to pair honesty with reality. and the show is just long and weird. But I met through that show, I met, like, Steve Byrne, who kind of became really a guy who took me under his comedic wing and, like, got me on the road doing stand-up and stuff like that. But I really didn't start writing until probably, like, I mean, we were writing things at the time, but nobody really cared about the stuff my writing partner and I worked on for about 10 years, I would
wow.
say. Maybe less, but right around there until we started working, you know, really heavily in TV.
You've written for some of the most creative comedy shows in recent years, including Netflix's Arrested Development and FX's You're the Worst. What do you think it is about your approach to comedy writing that has landed you in these innovative writers' rooms?
Wow, that's a very good question. I have a writing partner, my buddy Evan Mann, who I've worked with since college, and you know, we pretty much have exclusively written together, and that has sort of, over the years, really developed into a very, very easy working relationship where, you know, we kind of bounce very well off each other. And I think when we go to meet and work, to go and work on a show, because we do them together, you know, there is just, I think, a creative mind between us that mm-hmm. is very funny and knows how to do story. I mean, it's just like anything else. It comes from years of practice, but and I also think, you know, part of it is, like, do people want to work with you? You know, like, mm-hmm. are you kind of like a chilled out person or are you crazy? I mean, I've worked with people who are both.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, like, you're going to spend a lot of time with these people and you are going to share very intimate details. And, you know, you're going to say things that are going to make people really laugh. And you're going to say things that make people go, like, what are you talking about? Have you been listening? You know, you're going to go through all that. So
yeah.
I think it's part of it is just a vibe of working with someone. And then, you know, part of it is just that we've worked for a while and you start to get, like, a track record of things you've worked on and you know, people can, you know, cross-reference you and stuff. But I've also been very lucky to work on the shows I've worked on. I mean, like, working on Arrested Development for Mitch Hurwitz and Jimmy Vallely was unbelievable. And then, you know, You're the Worst with Stephen Falk was, like, I mean, that was a show that I just loved and being able to work on. It's very surreal.
Yeah. Do you have a proudest accomplishment, something that you're particularly happy and proud of in terms of your creative contributions to Arrested Development?
I mean, Mitch Hurwitz was so good to my writing partner and myself. You know, a lot of writers cycle through that show, and we were there from the beginning to the end. And Mitch really appreciated the work we did, so much so that we signed on as, I don't even remember what the exact credit was, it was some kind of producer, and he moved us up to executive producers, which again is a very, you know, it just is not protocol for that to happen in a year for someone to change your credit, and Mitch really went to bat for us, so having the approval of Mitch Hurwitz, I mean, the first time you meet Mitch Hurwitz, you're like, oh my God, this is crazy. Working with him, having a short texting with him, you know, all that stuff was so surreal. But at the end, for him to kind of cap it by saying, I value the work you guys did so much, because again, it is a lot of work that he kind of laid down that for us was you know, very big of him. And yeah, I mean, that definitely a moment where you are like, wow, that's pretty crazy. If you told me that in college, I would have, you know, sucker punched you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's very cool. That's great that happened. Yeah. And I can imagine it would have felt very surreal. Yeah. In 2014, you were a guest on the first ever episode of your fellow comedian Dave Anthony's history podcast, The Dollop, and you quickly became the co-host of the podcast. What's the origin story of The Dollop?
I met Dave through just podcasting, you know, again, like sort of we were talking about before, you just try to explore different avenues when you're hungry. And I just kind of started podcasting. I met Dave on a friend's podcast, and we were friendly for probably 2 years before Dave asked me to guest host on his other podcast, which was called Walking the Room. And I did a couple episodes of that. And then I went over there to what I thought was record another episode of that. And he was like, no, I have this new one that I want to rotate comedians on. And I came in and I sat down and we did the first episode. And, you know, we part of the reason I think he asked me was because when we had been on shows together, we had a lot of fun and we were making each other laugh. And we sat down and we did an episode. And I think just after that episode, you know, he and I as well, but he was the one who made the decision, was sort of like, okay, I think, you know, just you and I. And then it just kind of from there grew, you know, we just kind of developed a good kind of working relationship and friendship. And I think it just helped the show blossom, you know.
Mm-hmm. You recently came back to Wisconsin to record both your debut comedy album, Riddled with Disease, and a few episodes of The Dollop. Why is it important for you to maintain your Wisconsin ties?
Well, I think, you know, living in a place like L.A. now, I think there is no real sense of community. You have your community, you know, you have the people that you surround yourself with and you have your neighborhood, but there really is no actual sense of kinship or community. And I think that's something you really do find in the Midwest. And, you know, growing up, I mean, it formed me. I mean, I mm-hmm. do feel a particular connection to Milwaukee and Wisconsin and people from the Midwest in general, because I just think there is a, you know, there's a culture that I just find so familiar. And there's also, I think the attitude of people is so, you know, it sounds, again, a little cliched, but refreshing. People mm-hmm. are very genuine, nice. And I just think that it's always a good place to go to. And, you know, and I think there's something nice about sharing the stuff you do with people that you grew up with, or, you know, with your parents or your family. I really do kind of revel in that part of all of it, being able to, you know, record my album there and have my father there, be able to do shows there and have my little brothers and sisters there, you know, my best friend from second grade, who is still my best friend, come to shows and hang out, you know. So I don't know. The truth is I have one tattoo. It's of the Green Bay Packers. Mm. It represents my love for the Packers, but it also represents, you know, I really am very proud of where I'm from.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And well, you should be. That's great. Yeah. Do you have an all-time favorite joke that you've written?
You know, I really don't. I mean, I think in a way, by the time you feel like you're done with a joke, it almost isn't for you as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you fall in love and out of love with material, you know, very fickly.
Yeah.
There are the newest bit I work on is the thing that I'm the most passionate about, most focused on. Like on my album, I have this long thing about social media.
Yeah, I wanted
and,
to ask you
know,
about
that was something that I was working on so much that it did by the it kind of. I don't even want to say peak because that sounds a little ego-y, but it definitely felt like it had come together right when I was about to record the album, maybe a couple weeks before.
Number 5. No more liking bad news. It's weird. Isn't that weird? Someone posts something sad, we're like, aw. I like that. This girl I know, her dog just died, right? She posted a sad picture of it, this caption, right? Over 3,000 likes. I'm at home like, who is like, a dog is dead. What's happening over here? Doesn't work like that in real life. You sound crazy in real life, right? Someone's like, my dog just died. You're like, oh my God, I like that. That's awesome. Can I see it? May I see it? I'd love to.
I just think it's so bizarre. Like, Facebook tried it with the kind of a spectrum of emotions and stuff, but for mm-hmm. the most part on, you know, Twitter or Instagram, if something bad has happened to someone, you know, they've mm-hmm. had a terrible fall, they're in the hospital, someone's animal has passed away, someone's father's passed away, they post these sad things, these long, heartfelt things. You know, he fought to the end. He struggled every day, and now he's gone. He's gone forever, and I'll miss him. And we're like, oh, I like that. I just am like, wait, what? Why do we like this? Should not. That sounds like you are rooting for the death of a father, you know? So it feels so counter to me. It feels like what we should do is go, I acknowledge it, and this should have no likes.
Yeah, yeah.
This should have no likes on it, but you should know that everyone was like, wow.
Yeah, you really tapped into something there, because that's the thing when I see someone, even if it's not a personal thing about a dog dying or a family member dying, they're posting some bad news about a school shooting or something. I go, I don't like that at all. Yeah.
I mean, it is not what you're feeling.
No, exactly. Yeah.
You know, the thumbs up button, like, hey, all right. Yeah.
No.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good for you guys. No. My dog's dead. Yeah. All right. I'm happy about it.
How do you think your Wisconsin roots have influenced your comedic voice?
I mean, you know, really when you think about stand-up is it's mostly complaining. It's complaining in stories. And so I think that I try to approach things, even if they're complainy, in not a too negative way. I think that, you know, is part of it. I also think that just in general, kind of the way you perceive the world and, you know, the way you are, your sensibility is kind of just fully formed. Mm-hmm. From that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I mean, it also makes me talk about, I mean, I talk about being from Wisconsin, you know, I mean, I talk about the Packers, I talk, you know, I just think it is. I mean, I think part of it, again, is that I moved to a city that really has no individual culture. I mean, it's sort of like what you know, it's mm-hmm. traffic, it's polluted, it's on fire, it sort of sucks. But Jay Leno's here. The big things. And then, but I do think there's just so much more culture to places like Wisconsin.
Mm, yeah. What's next for Gareth Reynolds?
Well, I mean, I'm going to leave here and go to work. In 2020, there's a lot of stand-up dates, a lot of dollop dates, you know, still writing mm-hmm. stuff. So every year it just seems to get a little better. So I have no complaints. But yeah, a lot of touring, a lot of being on the road. I'm at the point where it's like I'm very happy to just kind of go out there and perform live, and then when I'm here, work on other stuff. But, you know, I mean, it's truly a busy life, but a charmed one in many ways. I mean, mm-hmm. like we talked about, there was a time when I was doing kid birthday parties donating blood platelets. So,
Gareth Reynolds, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you very much, and thank you to all your listeners, truly. Very happy to be on the radio with you guys.
Gareth Reynolds is a stand-up comedian who hails from the Milwaukee area. His debut comedy album, Riddled with Disease, is now available. Find out more about Gareth at wpr.org/beta. Coming up, a rock and roll thought experiment in which we put Jethro Tull's 1972 album, Thick as a Brick, under the microscope.
They made an album called Aqualung, and many people interpreted this as a concept album. Ian Anderson said, no, that wasn't a concept album. And apparently the story goes that he said, I'll show you what a concept album is.
Author Seth Kaufman joins us next. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.